back to another episode of Talking Moto. Today, boy, do we have a lot to cover. Rule changes, more injuries, sadly to someone already battling plenty of injuries and whatnot, big-time struggles going on in both classes, some just really weird and boneheaded mistakes from a championship-level guy in the 450 class, Chase Sexton. Obviously, we will get to all that in the big takeaways. I think today we are going to kind of speed run the heat races a little bit and the qualifying a little bit to really get to those big takeaways early, because there is a lot to talk about, especially here in the 250 class in Detroit with red flags for a second main event in a row, 250 East, two main events so far this year, two red flags for both of them. So this time it has happened at a point in the race where nobody can ever remember a red flag coming out this late in a race. Big controversy. There was rule changes before last season, and I guess a bunch of people just weren't really informed on it. So today we are obviously, like every other show, we're going to start off here with the 250 qualifying. Qualifying first, Levi Kitchen definitely needed a bounce back race here in Detroit after the disaster that was round one for them in Tampa last week. He comes out, qualifies first with a 48.363. And then he had his teammate, Seth Hamaker, who was dealing with some pretty bad food poisoning. I guess he got it during lunch, so it was after qualifying, before the heat races and main event. I guess he got food poisoning, but he was able to qualify second before getting the food poisoning. Hopefully it wasn't one of the Detroit restaurants that gave him the food poisoning. That would be a real shame, especially with me being not so far from Detroit. But anyway, Max Anstey, your red plate holder, came in qualifying third with a 48.569, so just 0.2 off of Levi Kitchen, with Tom Vielle coming in fourth here, a 0.1 off of Anstey. And then RJ Hampshire coming, rounding out the top five in qualifying with a 49.040. So he was 0.7 off of Levi Kitchen and 0.4 off of Tom Vielle, the man in front of him. RJ Hampshire, also another guy that really needed a good bounce back race after, just like Levi Kitchen, the absolute disaster that he had in Tampa Bay, landing on a tough block, being stuck there for a lap and a half, getting passed by the entire field. He thought he got screwed by the red flag as well. On the red flag, I didn't pick this up when it happened in Tampa last week, but I guess the red flag came out and they put RJ Hampshire at the very back of the pack, even though he was only, I guess he said he was only lapped by like the first five guys. I don't know exactly where he was timing and scoring wise when the red flag came out, but he feels like he got screwed over there. Levi Kitchen also, this came out, I think the first time I heard it was Saturday watching the qualifying coverage, that when the red flag came out for him, he made four passes on that lap. Red flag comes out, and so then they reverted to the lap before that. So he lost those four positions, and that forced him to end in 9th. If he keeps those four spots, he ends in 5th. So, red flag news all around for, seems like, everybody in this 250 East class so far. So that will take care of qualifying. Well, we'll talk about Austin Faulkner too, who qualified 10th. He was dealing with a sickness in Tampa, flu-like symptoms, I guess he said he had. Thought he was feeling better, only qualified 10th. Maybe still trying to figure out the bike a little bit. He definitely had his struggles all night long, hitting the ground a couple times once again. I did see also in qualifying, he got taken out by a Triumph Tough Block. Looks like Triumph Tough Blocks are going against their own riders now. Just really hate to see it. Obviously, joking around there. Hate to see anybody crash, especially Faulkner, but good thing he's got that new Alpine Stars chest protector airbag system on. So hopefully that makes him hitting the deck a little too often, a little bit easier and less painful for him. So now we can jump into 250 heat number one. Nate Thrasher, broken finger also. More injury news that popped out last second before the race. I guess he collided with another rider at the test track. I guess this other rider came crossing over into his lane on the track, going opposite directions, and they collided. Nate Thrasher broke his middle finger, I believe. They said it was on his right hand, so his front brake hand is front brake middle finger is the broken one, I guess. So he was running hand guards all day on both hands. So now we got Joe Shimoda on the East Coast or West Coast, excuse me, running one hand guard due to two broken fingers. Nate Thrasher running two hand guards for one broken finger. And all he does is just goes out, grabs the hole shot. Tom Vielle, third across the line, best start he's had, and he just struggled. Tom Vielle, I don't know. I don't think you can call it a championship hangover at this point. I think you can say maybe that's what happened to him in outdoors. But so far, Tom Vielle has struggled. He finished fifth in the heat race, got passed by Hymus and Hamaker to move his way down to fifth. Cameron McAdoo, riding with the torn ACL, was putting pressure on Nate Thrasher pretty much the entire race. Thrasher was able to hold him off the whole race, and McAdoo went down in the sand in the last turn, shuffled down to fourth, so still able to qualify straight through his heat race. But Thrasher goes out there, wire to wire, broken finger, and wins his heat race. Like I said, we're going to kind of speed run through this. Faulkner did not qualify straight through. He finished the heat race in 10th. Ooh, excuse me. So he then had to go to the LCQ and deal with that absolute chaos. Did go out there and win the LCQ, though. 250 heat number two. Max Anstey went out, grabbed the hole shot. Levi was able to put a good block pass on him right before that first rhythm section after they crossed over the starting straight or whatever you want to call it. And then just kind of was able to pull away from him a little bit. And RJ Hampshire also solid in his heat race. Finished third. Anstey was there in second. Nothing really too crazy happened in this one. besides Levi Kitchen just going out and straight up passing the points leader and kind of taking off from him a little bit. Anstey did have the fastest lap of that heat race with a 48.1, and Levi Kitchen was the only other guy in the 48-second range with a 48.4. But Levi Kitchen was just able to be more consistent, and once he got in the lead, was able to just take off from Max Anstey, really. And now it is main event time, where all the absolute chaos ensued. Craziness happening. Anstey was able to go out, grab the whole shot. Levi Kitchen got a good start. Tom Vielle seems like he's struggled with his starts in the main events. Two good starts in his heat races so far this year, but he's really seems like he's struggled in the main event starts. And Anstey did to Levi Kitchen what Kitchen did to Anstey in the heat race. Max Anstey went out there, gapped him pretty quickly, and seemed like he was kind of just holding a little 5-second lead over him for the longest time. Got to 7 seconds at some points, but it was mainly 5 to 6 seconds of a gap, and that is really all Max Anstey needed to do. He said the last couple laps before the red flag came out, he was just taking all his safe lines, kind of just packed it in, and then with 7 seconds left, Cameron McAdoo going through the whoops, gets a little squirrely, gets uppercutted by his bike, laid out on the track. When I say laid out, I mean completely just like a starfish laying in kind of the very bottom of the turn, not really in a super dangerous spot, I don't think, especially with it went whoops into a right-hand turn and then a little rhythm section, and then just outside of the rhythm section was the end of the track, or the edge of the track, excuse me. So not like a crazy amount of space that McAdoo was going to have to get taken across. Thought maybe they'd be able to get him across without having to red flag it, but I guess just with that deep into the main event, 7 seconds, like I said, they thought we won't be able to get him across safely, and so they throw the red flag, and that is when a little bit of the confusion started. Max Anstey fans were probably very angry, thinking that he had two main events in a row, first two races, he had it wrapped up in the bag. He had a 6-second lead, and that was gone right at the waving of the red flag, because it then went from 6 seconds to Levi Kitchen is now right on Max Anstey's back tire. And it turned into a 3 1/4 lap sprint to the end. Kitchen was able to get around Anstey. Anstey went all the way back to third at one point, because just like Levi Kitchen being able to pull up right on the back tire of Max Anstey, RJ Hampshire was able to do the same thing to Levi Kitchen and Tom Vielle and Nate Thrasher. And staggered start. There has been a lot of conversation about how that staggered start should be changed. But I guess I should talk about this this rule change for the red flag itself first. Going into the 2024 season. So going into last year, the rule got changed from if 90% of the race was complete, then they would just wave the checkered flag, race would be over at that point. And now the rule is the race is going to finish, and after the red flag, there must be 3 full laps after that restart happens. And so because they needed 3 full laps, and the way the track design was set up, with them starting at like right on, going right down the start straight, they had to do a, what is it? Yeah, probably about a quarter of a lap, and then another full lap to get a green flag, and then white flag, checkered. Everyone thought, even the broadcast, the way they were talking about it on the broadcast, they thought it would just be first time they crossed the finish line, it'd be green flag, and then the next time it would be white flag, checkered flag. Just simply because when they do restart this race, they start with a green flag. So it is, hey, green flag, race is on, the time should now resume. But with this new rule change that happened going into last year, they now need 3 full laps after the restart. So that threw a wrench in everybody's plan. I guess a bunch of the teams maybe weren't notified about this, didn't know about the rule change, didn't realize, remember, what have you. But yes, this rule change took effect starting last year, and we just haven't seen a red flag with 7 seconds left on the clock in 2 laps or a lap or that this deep into a race. So it's kind of tricky. Not exactly sure if you can blame the AMA for not notifying these teams. Do you blame the teams for not diving deep enough into the rule book, if you want to call it that? I don't know who you blame. But I know Cameron McAdoo, I guess, reached out to Max Anstey after to apologize. Because, I mean, yeah, if McAdoo doesn't go down there, if he doesn't go down in general, then Max Anstey is 2 for 2 this year. If he goes down in a different spot, maybe a different corner, closer to the edge of the track, then there's no red flag. But stand-up guy from Cameron McAdoo to reach out to Max Anstey, apologize. And McAdoo also posted, I'm sure a lot of people saw it already, but there was a giant gash in the like upper cheekbone area of Cameron McAdoo. They had him in a neck brace, walking off the track, blood dripping down his face from that giant gash in his face. So obviously can do nothing about it at this point besides just hope that Cameron McAdoo is going to be okay to go in Daytona in a couple weeks. And so now I'll throw out some of the ideas that I've seen, or one of the ideas that I've seen floated out there, and that is the top 3 guys should all be reset back to the same time distance in between them. I don't know how you can put it down to just the top 3 guys, because then like 4th and 5th, they could get screwed. And I mean, there's big money paid for podium positions, and if you're letting the top three guys go back to this same time interval in between them, then just say screw it and do everybody who's on the lead lap go back to the same time difference. I just think that could turn into a giant mess. You could have a bunch more people jumping the gun. Then you got to deal with first place goes, and we'll use this week as an example, about a 6-second lead for Max Anstey. He goes, then Levi Kitchen's got to pull. Does Levi Kitchen pull up to the white line? Does he stay back where he was off the original staggered start spot? And then once he goes, and another 3 seconds goes, and RJ Hampshire, same thing. Does he pull up to the white line, or does he stay in that third position in the staggered start? It's just, I don't know the exact thing, the exact solution. I think that might be one of the better ones that I've seen thrown out. I mean, obviously, you want to see every race get finished with the exact time that they have allotted for it, time and laps that they have allotted for it. You hate to see a race get cut short because, I mean, you just never know, something. Max Anstey, final lap, could have stalled the bike and tipped it over in the sand or something, and Levi Kitchen could have gotten the pass there, last corner type of deal. So yeah, I think maybe that giving the gap, I could understand if they do the whole reset the gap thing, maybe top 10, everyone on the lead lap. But then you just, there's a whole nother bag of worms that happens with just that first guy that gets kind of cut off from not getting that same gap distance to the guy behind him and the guy in front of him. And then people are just going to be complaining about that. So, long story short, which is, it's been long story long at this point, I don't know the best solution for this. Best solution is just stay on two wheels. Or if you're going to crash, do it safely. That's not possible to do, I don't think. You can't crash safely. Just stay on two wheels, I guess. I don't know, man. My head just keeps popping. Thing that keeps popping back in my head is just that time gap thing. And basically everything that I've said about it already. So I'll stop rambling on about it. But we'll take a look at the final positions and whatnot now. So Levi Kitchen was able to make a pass happen. And Max Anstey finished second. RJ Hampshire in third. So Levi Kitchen, win or not, he still had a good bounce back weekend. Fastest qualifier, won his heat race, and then in the end, goes down in the books as his win. He talked about in the press conference after about how he's still really motivated because he doesn't really feel like it was his win. Max Anstey, kind of the same sentiments, but seemed really calm about the situation. Obviously, you got to feel for Max Anstey getting just straight up getting screwed over, really, in something just totally out of his control. And then he's the oldest guy out there, I do believe. I don't think RJ Hampshire is older than him. We'll take a look here. RJ Hampshire is 29. Yeah, and Max Anstey would be 31. So, Max Anstey, oldest guy out there, a little bit more of a head on his shoulders, especially with everything that he's had to go through with going from Europe to America, back to Europe, back to America, and just kind of bouncing all over the place. And then RJ Hampshire rounding out the podium. Just like Levi Kitchen, he needed a good bounce back race. Almost was able to steal second from Max Anstey, but Anstey was able to make a quick pass back on him to hold down second place. So now championship points. Anstey still has the points lead, but Levi Kitchen did move up a considerable amount. I think it was about, 7 spots here. He was able to move up in the points. Now he is only down 9 points. And taking a look at it, RJ Hampshire moved up 10 positions to now 8th with that was his number, so that kind of threw me off for a second. It doesn't have the total on there. Okay, but yeah, RJ Hampshire able to move up big time with Levi Kitchen doing the same. Tom Vielle is 12 back in third. Hymus 15 back in fourth. And Nate Thrasher rounding out the top five in fifth with 16 back. So now 250, big takeaway time. Touched on it earlier. Tom Vielle was kind of known as a really good starter when he came over here from Europe. It's shown his first couple years. He was a good starter. This year he's been getting good starts in his heat races. He's just been getting decent starts in the main events, and that's really put him kind of behind the eight ball. Coming in as the defending champion, running the number one plate, and now he's down 12 points early, and you can kind of just put your finger on it saying, hey, he's gotten 2 bad starts in his main events, and it's just something. Especially in a quick series, you need to figure out your starts early, because he's gone 5 in Tampa and now 4 in Detroit. So if he's able to come out in Daytona, where he got his first win of his career in Supercross last year, if he can come out, get a good start in his heat race, get another good start in the main event, I can definitely see him winning. It's just he's got to figure out his starts if he's going to keep that championship under the Red Bull KTM Racing semi. What else do we got here? Max Anstey, on the other hand, has gotten 2 really good starts in both main events. He's hole-shotted both main events so far. So, obviously, the Star bike is working really good for him. It's one of the bikes that's known with the most horsepower out there for a 250. Probably the most horsepower for a 250, that Star Racing Yamaha. We see it every year in outdoors. It first couple laps always seem like it's always star bikes. We see it in Supercross, East, West. 450s maybe not so much because it's a little bit more balanced up there. But 250s, they are always getting good starts, and Max Anstey is taking that to his full advantage. Got the whole shot last week, goes out and wins. Gets the whole shot this week. Should have won, but he didn't. Just spent a while talking about it. Levi Kitchen was really able to take advantage of that red flag restart. And thinking about it now, you could kind of think, well, maybe being a lot younger than Max Anstey kind of played a role in it, with maybe having a little bit more speed late in motos and whatnot. But then you also got to think he was dealing with a big sickness and was unable to ride round one at Anaheim 1. That's why he's over here now on the East Coast. But he really took advantage of that late 3.5 lap sprint race that they did to end the race. Gets the good pass. And, yeah, really took advantage of it. And the last big takeaway, which kind of got nullified a little bit in the press conference after, was Max Anstey going after his big boss, Bobby Reagan, on the podium. I guess Bobby called Max Anstey earlier in the day and tried to fire him up, I guess, give him a little pep talk or whatnot. Because I guess Max Anstey kind of said that, you know, last week was good, but can't expect to win every race. It's just if the win's there, he'll take it, but doesn't expect to win every race. And I guess Bobby Reagan took that as a way of maybe Max Anstey not believing in himself or the bike, or maybe a little bit scared, maybe, or nervous. And so Max Anstey on the podium after said, if you aren't at the race, don't bother calling me anymore. Pretty much did not look happy while talking about it. And then in the press conference after, Anstey said he called Bobby back after that, thinking maybe he went a little too far, but I guess old Bobby was all for it, saying he did his job, he got him fired up, and that's what they're here to do. They're here to win races. And he was all smiles talking about it in the post-race press conference. So nothing too crazy, no inner team drama going on, I guess, over there for the Star Racing Yamaha 250 crew they got. That will wrap up our 250s for 250 East for another week. They will be going on a break. Like I mentioned, they're not going to be back until Daytona. And next week is Arlington. So 250 East comes out, gets two races in, and then gets a break. So now, flipping it over to the 450s. We're going to kind of do the same thing here. Speed run, qualifying, and heat races a little bit. Not as crazy of a main event. There was no red flag with 7 seconds left in this main event. But there is definitely a big talking point to have for the 450 main event. So qualifying, Chase Sexton comes out after what was a great race for the most part last week. And then he had the crash and the whoops. And I guess also the reason he fell so much was because on a dirt bike, you got the throttle on, you let go, it'll go back on its own. Supposedly in Chase Sexton's crash and the whoops, he broke something, cracked something, tweaked it or whatnot, where I guess he had to manually take the throttle and decelerate it. I guess it wasn't going back on his own. So that explains why he went so far downhill at the end of that race. But comes out, qualifies first with a 47.353. Kenny Roczen second with a 47.669. And now Chase Sexton's biggest rival for this championship, Cooper Webb, third with a 47.864. Cooper Webb, not always known for his speed and his qualifying times, but now you look at it with the handful of guys who are out, now he's going to consistently be up there, top three in qualifying. And then Justin Cooper and Malcolm Stewart round out the top five of our qualifying in Detroit. Heat race number one for the 450s. We had Justin Cooper go out, grab a hole shot. Dylan Frandis made his return to racing. He was out with a sickness since Anaheim 2. He's been gone. He's been gone for a while. And he was able to make a quick pass on Justin Cooper in the whoops. Justin Cooper, not very good in the whoops. But Jason Anderson kind of just came out of nowhere, got a 2-for-1 deal, getting past Justin Cooper and Dylan Frandis. Jason Anderson goes on to take the win in this. Ken Roczen second. Justin Cooper held off Frandis in a little late race push. And nothing really too crazy whatsoever in 450 heat number one. So now we will move to heat two, where we had Sexton and Webb, thinking maybe a little preview for the main event. And then AP in Detroit comes out, pulls a hole shot, Sexton in second. Sexton was able to make his way to the lead in the whoops. Plessinger fades down to fourth. Malcolm Stewart second. Cooper Webb third. Once again, nothing crazy, but Chase Sexton kind of in the same boat as Levi Kitchen and RJ Hampshire. Really needed to have a strong race here in Detroit to kind of make up for what happened last week in Tampa. And just like Levi Kitchen, goes out fastest qualifier and then turns it around, goes out and wins his heat race. So now 450 main event time. And for Cooper Webb, he didn't grab the hole shot, but he got a very big gift right before the gate dropped. And that was, of course, Chase Sexton got stuck in the gate. His mechanic, I saw a video, his mechanic, Jade Dungy, didn't think he was counting the gate, because when the 30-second board turns sideways, the gate's going to drop in 3 to 5 seconds. Dungy didn't think he was timing the gate. He thought I guess Plessinger sometimes has a little flinch that goes on. Plessinger was lined up right to chase Sexton's left. So maybe Sexton saw that flinch and he went for it. And then Anderson saw that and he went for it. But the gate was far enough down for Jason Anderson where he was still able to go over the top of it. Sexton stuck in the gate, dead last, while his teammate, who was lined up right next to him, Plessinger, goes out, grabs the hole shot, Kenny in second, and then Sexton ran into the back of somebody. I guess somebody kind of like drifted over in front of him, hit the back of him, down again, dead last, is far dead last as you could get. And the time was on. Roczen and Webb were both able to get around Aaron Plessinger. And then Roczen, Webb had a little yo-yo going the entire time. And also I noticed the entire time Sexton was down 13 seconds just due to being in dead last. While coming through the field, he was the only person on the track to never lose time to Ken Roczen and Cooper Webb. The entire race, he was down, it was about 13 and a half seconds. There was once I noticed it got to 14, I think like 14.1. And then at the next timing and scoring line that he went over, it was right back to about 13 and a half. And that's where it stayed for the entire race. That just shows you the absolute speed that Chase Sexton had. If he didn't get stuck in that gate, my prediction would have been wrong, and I think he would have won. I don't think there is any way anybody would have been able to keep up with him, because yes, he was running the same time as the leaders, but he was also coming through the pack, making passes. He ran a 47.935 in the main event, where his qualifying time was a 47.353. He was the only one in the 47s in the heat race. He was absolutely on it. But you run into the gate, silly mistake. You then run into the back of somebody. Again, not exactly sure how it happened, but supposedly kind of got cut off a little bit. And it was right before the whoops. Gets kind of cut off a little bit, I guess. Runs into the back of them. Goes down. Two very crucial mistakes within, well, just from the starting gate and then two, three turns later on the ground, picking himself back up in dead last once again. But then the fact that he was just able to go from last to third was a lot like Hangtown last summer, Moto 2, where you went 40th to first. He was just absolutely ripping. There was a point where he was in, I think he was in about seventh. His mechanic, they showed it on TV, his mechanic put podium possible. And I was like, man, I don't think he's going to be able to do it. At that point, he was getting into the guys like Barcia, Justin Cooper, Malcolm Smith, his teammate Aaron Plessinger, and then he had Anderson, who he had to make the pass on for third, who then Anderson later went down and finished in sixth. I just didn't think he was going to be able to get all the way to third. But he did. Proved me wrong. He didn't even know I was thinking that, but he still proved me wrong. But yeah, after the little yo-yo that was happening with Cooper Webb and Ken Roczen, Cooper Webb, Ken Roczen, the end of the race, seems like it's always going to go Cooper Webb's way. And that's just exactly what happened again this week. Cooper Webb was able to do it through the sand, over the finish, and then when they came back down the start straight, Webb was able to just kind of seemed like he honestly kind of just muscled his way to the very inside on Roczen, and then down the long rhythm section, Roczen had the inside, and then he went back outside, and Webb was able to sneak back up the inside again past him, and that's how he was able to get it done for the lead, and then eventually for the win. And then on the podium, Roczen talked about he knows the stigma, end of the race, him and Cooper Webb. Cooper Webb always seems to get him. Old Kenny's aware of it. It's just one of those rivalries or battles that just always seems to go one person's way. And this time, in this situation, it just always seems to be Cooper Webb. Also, I picked Cooper Webb. So, yeah. I'm just stacking wins over here with my predictions. I don't remember who I picked in the 250s. Might have to go back and take a peek. Hopefully it was Levi Kitchen. I said this last year. I really got to start writing these down so I remember. I'm going to do it this time, I promise. 450, big takeaways. Sexton, just an absolute mental mistake, getting stuck in the gate. And then he knows he's got to push because he sees everybody coming out of the first turn by time he's out of the gate. And then he just kind of pushes too hard and makes another mistake. But once again, his speed is absolutely there. I think it is way better than last year. It is borderline 2023 speed. But now that we've seen this 2023 speed, we've also started to see the 2023 mistakes come back from Chase Sexton starting last year, or not last year, excuse me, last week in the Whoops in Tampa in the lead. 2023 Chase Sexton in the Whoops in Tampa towards the end of the race in the lead goes down both times. This year, I mean, if he saw the flinch from Plessinger, that's I watching the video, I don't really see Aaron Plessinger flinch too much. Watching it again, yeah, I don't see any flinch whatsoever from Plessinger. And then as soon as Sexton goes, hits the gate, Anderson takes off, and he got very lucky. Jason Anderson got very, very lucky that he didn't get stuck in the gate as well. But the speed is there. The mistakes, also sadly for Sexton, always seem to come when that speed is there. Cooper Webb, like I was saying, Cooper Webb, Ken Roczen, one of those rivalries or battles that seems to always be so close, but just then once again, always seems to go in one guy's way. Webb gets it done again. It all started with the finger guns. I think it was in Arlington, actually. Webb gets Roczen, last lap, turns around over the finish, shoots him with the finger guns. Boy, was my dad not happy with that, as he's a Roczen fan. And now Cooper Webb tied with Chase Sexton at the top of the points. I think Cooper Webb has all the momentum in the world. Both guys, 121 points. Ken Roczen, the next closest, with 105, down 16 points. I think Roczen, if he wants to find a way in this, he's going to have to get a win in Arlington or in Daytona to get himself back into this championship hunt. But at the top, dueling red plates going to Arlington, Texas. No better place to have dueling red plates than in Texas. I mean, they might still be having duels down there with guns. I don't know. But yeah, Cooper Webb has, in my mind, it seems like he has all the momentum in the world. Yes, Sexton just went from 22nd to 3rd, but Cooper Webb won the race. He was dogging Ken Roczen all race long and then was able to get it done towards the end. Honestly, I think I might be picking Cooper Webb again for 450s here. I think, yeah, it's about time to get into predictions. Also, we are going to Arlington. That means we are going 250 West once again. So we'll do a little refresher on the points here. Julian Beaumaire is the points leader with Jordan Smith down 2, Hayden Deegan down 3, Cole Davies, last time we saw him, Triple Crown, was going into the last moto with all the momentum, going 1-1, and then goes down early, close to getting his first win of his career, unable to do it, down 15 in 4th in Joe Shimoda now. I talked about his two broken fingers earlier. I'm sure this little break helped him big time. Not sure how much he was on the bike, riding, testing. I don't think he has to do too much. Seemed like he was very, obviously, he was very quick. Anaheim 1, he goes out there and he wins. He was quick in San Diego before he hit the pit board and broke his two fingers. I think this break came at a perfect time for him. Well, obviously not perfect. He would have liked it to be a couple weeks earlier, but Joe Shimoda, I believe, benefited the most out of everybody in the 250 West from this break. And so I think he might be a force to be reckoned with. And honestly, I might have just talked myself into my two predictions here. I think it's going to be Joe Shimoda coming off of a break where hopefully his fingers are a lot more healed up, feeling a lot better, doesn't have to worry about it too much. And then I just said Cooper Webb might be my pick. I'm going to take a look at the track here first. Let me take a little peek at the track. From what I've heard, there's a chance that Arlington could be very hard and maybe a little slick. Maybe not necessarily Cooper Webb's specialty. We know he's a big East Coast guy. His average finish is a full position better on the East Coast than it is the West Coast. When you think of hard, slick conditions, you need throttle control, which is Ken Roczen. But I don't think I can pick against Chase Sexton right now. That's not English. It's either, in my head, Sexton or Ken Roczen. Flipping a coin. I don't have a coin. I'm going Chase Sexton. I think the just raw speed that he has is going to be the difference maker in Arlington. And while I got this track pulled up, I'll finish this thought first. I think just the raw speed that Chase Sexton has shown, both in Tampa with getting the big lead before he threw it away, and then the raw speed he showed in Detroit going from getting stuck in the gate dead last to crashing dead last again to then third place. I just don't see how you can stop that. So now looking at the track, we are going back to a left-handed start. Kind of the same style start as Detroit. A little bit longer, more sweeping action on the start, right into a long rhythm section, the longest on the track, into a 180 bull corner, another rhythm section, another 180, back, little double, back across the start, kind of pretty close to a 180, looks like it might be triple into the whoops. Malcolm Stewart might be pretty quick here, depending on how these whoops play out, but it looks like you can have a chance to go into these suckers with a lot of speed. And then you got a 180 corner right after that into the finish, back onto the start, into some sand, little 180 turn in the sand, little rhythm section, looks like you'll probably go 2-3. Is that a... Yeah, it probably looks like you probably go 2-3, and then another 180, little double, then another 180, and then you hook back up onto the start across the whole shot line. So I think it's going to be a good track with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 180 turns, and then kind of a half. Not really a 90, but not a 180 completely turn. And then kind of the same deal, a 180 sand turn. So I think it's going to be very good racing in Arlington. Like I said, Joe Shimoda, Chase Sexton, those are my picks for Arlington. Yeah, that's going to wrap us up here for a crazy episode, historical episode maybe even. Well, historical night of racing, historical 7 seconds of racing in the 250s. So hit me up, talking_moto on X. Questions, comments, predictions, if you got any, talking_moto on X, like always. We'll be back next week talking Arlington, the return of the 250 West, and hopefully it's not a Hayden Deegan show all race. because nobody enjoys that. All right, Talking_Moto on X. I will be back next week. See ya.